And before you start your AI journey, there are three elements that are really important. One is strategic alignment, because if you just invest in AI for the sake of AI, that it's cool, or that your board asks you to do something with AI, that's pointless. It needs to be linked to the strategy of your company.
Hello and welcome to the Data Culture Podcast. I'm Carsten Bange, founder and CEO of Bark, and my guest today is Emma Verhagen. Emma is from the Netherlands and has a long history of working for large organizations there like KPM, Philips, and the last 7 years at Unilever, but also has some consulting experience. And I would like to hear from her recommendations about how can we be successful with our AI strategy? How can we set it up in the right way and then also implement it in a way that we get business buy-in, that we can also develop a data and AI culture in the organization. And with that, we make sure that we are successful and we get a lot of fascinating tips from her. So this conversation is full of practical advice and I really liked it. So I hope you will too. Enjoy the episode. Hi, Emma.
Hey, Carsten.
Great to have you on my podcast today, Emma.
Great to be here. Thank you for inviting me.
Absolutely. Emma, you have a long history, work history with data and AI in several large organizations, consulting companies. I would like to dive right in. What have you observed are the key challenges in making AI successful?
One of the challenges that organizations face is that they are unsure where they should begin their AI journey. There are so many things that you can do, and there is so little budget that you may have. Mm-hmm. So the question is, where should you invest your money? Because if you don't invest your money properly, you won't have as much money left to really invest it in proper technologies. So it's very important how you start. You need to start, but you need to start in a proper way. Other companies are afraid of an AI bubble. And we know actually from last year, there were companies that were afraid that, hey, should we invest in AI? And now it's shifting more on when and how to invest in AI. Nevertheless, there's still a risk to invest in a wrong way where you may lose your money. So you need to be wise there. For smaller organizations, another challenge is that they have a lot of small AI solutions that are unintegrated. Mm-hmm. And for bigger organizations, the challenge is that they may have huge teams, AI teams or tech teams that are too big to actually be efficient. And another challenge for all organizations is the risk of losing control, because the more control you give to AI, the more powerful it is, but that can come at a cost. So their question is, how do you invest in a controlled way, and how do you still leave it up to the user to make the right decision and the end decision, but how do you not take too much time of your users to do that?
Yeah, interesting. So let's talk about these challenges, because obviously they're super important for AI success. And let's start with the beginning. As you said, it was interesting that you said the starting point is good. So how do I find the right way to start? What is the right way to start? I mean, we're talking about the right, let's say, initiative projects, probably also about the right team, the right alignment internally. What are the aspects to get off to a good start with AI?
Yeah. So the first thing is how you start your AI journey. Mm-hmm. And before you start your AI journey, there are three elements that are really important. One is strategic alignment, because if you just invest in AI for the sake of AI, that it's cool, or that your board asks you to do something with AI, that's pointless. It needs to be linked to the strategy of your company. So you need to start by deeply understanding what's your company strategy, what are the biggest challenges in your company, and talk to the business users. So start there and then co-create together with your business user an AI strategy. The second one is look at the value that would be delivered. And value is many times linked to also to the pain points, because in the pain points you have a cost, and then in the value you can make sure that those costs are not there. And another thing to keep in mind before you start your AI journey, that you need to keep in mind actually throughout your entire journey, is speed and efficiency. So making sure that you are not only talking about it, but you are going and implementing it, but you are not only just going straight into implementation without thinking it, right? So don't be frozen in analysis, but go according to the right methodologies of developing AI projects.
Okay, interesting. In the very large organizations, and you have worked at Unilever, but also others, isn't speed sometimes the key challenge?
Yes, and speed is one challenge because there are two big teams. So the teams are too big to actually be efficient. That's why I believe in small teams that where they receive their own scope, and better split the scope into smaller teams that have this huge scope. But this also means that everyone needs to understand the strategy. Mm-hmm. My vision for my team as well, every time, is that everyone, when they wake up in the morning, and every developer, so up to the developer, the project managers, everyone from the tech team, they need to wake up in the morning and think, okay, not only what do I need to deliver today, but how can I make sure that, for instance, the inventory is going down, you know, or to really think from a value perspective. Mm-hmm. Then you have speed, because those people really understand, and they're not just puppets that are doing whatever they're told to do. But if it's too big, then it's unmanageable. And also you don't give the freedom to people to do this. And it's also the right mentality. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. If you're used to not speed, to not working with speed, then it's a culture that needs to be changed.
From your experience, or maybe you have a recommendation for us, what would that mean in terms of implementing certain projects? So what are you thinking about? What's the time frame where you think that's good, that's useful, and that's helping to achieve our goals?
I would start. So first of all, if you don't start properly, then you're going to have a difficult time afterwards in change management and making sure that people are adopting your system. So my proposal, and the one that I work with companies in general, is that first you create an AI strategy. Don't spend too much time. So most organizations spend 6 months up to a year, or sometimes even longer. Mm-hmm. Don't put a deadline of your AI strategy needs to be done in 2 to 3 months. So if you're a bigger organization, 3 months, and if you're a smaller organization, two. Then at the end of your AI strategy, you should have a list of the best AI solutions that you co-created together with your business. And then you can see that actually during the AI strategy, you are getting the buy-in of the people. And it's not buying anymore, because it's not like you have an idea yourself that you try to sell. No, it's an idea that you came up together. It's their idea. So even the word buy-in is almost like an afterthought, but it should be a forefront that you need to co-create together with the business. Mm-hmm. And that brings you speed. It may feel like, yeah, if you go not slow, but if you think it through and spend 2-3 months on strategy, then you're going to go fast, because you know what you're talking about. And you got the trust as well. And then the adoption is much easier. And then from an implementation perspective, I believe that a minimum viable product should not take more than 3 to 6 months. And minimum viable product, I don't mean a product that is poorly tested. No, I mean a minimum viable product, in my definition, is a German quality product, uh-huh. which means no defects, works properly, and delivers results. And then you can scale it. And if that works, then you also get the trust of the organization.
Interesting. So 3 to 6 months is the goal. And I agree, for many large organizations, that's a challenge. But I also agree speed is of key concern here. Yeah, it has to be quick to show value. Let's go directly into your last sentence here. So we have now a goal. We want to have a good, let's say, prototype or a minimal viable product. And now you said, and then it's about scaling. And my experience is that often this is also a pretty big challenge, yeah, to get it really into the organization. Do you have any recommendations here? Did you see any, let's say, key factors that enable this or are of let's say, are the success factors again to scale something in the organization?
Yes, and it starts going back to the basics of co-creating, because this is what enables you to scale. So the very beginning and of the strategy, and I want to actually go a little bit deeper into how to do an AI strategy according to an MIT framework that we took over and further advanced, and is now much more advanced than it originally was, where you scale. So with keeping in mind that you want to scale, you want to start with creating your AI community from the business that you work with.
Uh-huh.
Many times, things are not scaled up or are not implemented, or the change management is not working because you're working with different people from the business. They can come and leave. But by creating this AI community at the forefront, then you create stability across the entire project.
Mm-hmm.
And once you create this AI strategy with the AI community, and then you have identified the best AI solutions, then in the implementation, you can design with them, you can test with them, you can ask them to be the super users. Again, going back to the same teams. And I think that's the key to success to scaling.
Mm-hmm.
Do you want to go a little bit deeper into this AI strategy framework?
Absolutely. You mentioned it's like the foundation also for scaling. So it would be super interesting to hear more about it.
Yes, sure. So there are a few steps in the framework that we have, the AI strategy framework. The first one is to evaluate in different interviews with this AI community that you created, and your AI community needs to be from different levels of the organization because you need everyone. Everyone is super super important. So the people on the ground are very important. And of course, you cannot work with everyone in the organization. You're going to work with thousands of people.
Mm-hmm.
But you can pick from different levels of the organization your super users, your AI community. And then plan those interviews in advance. That's also important because you need to start from the top, and the people on the top are the busiest people.
Mm-hmm.
And have the conversation with them. What is the current strategy? What do you do to make sure that that we achieve that strategy as an organization? You see, so far I haven't said anything about AI. Really look, start to where they are. Not start where you are. This is not how the human interactions works. So, and then look at their pain points. And, you know, if you ask people about their pain points, they're going to, and if they know, you know, you're doing this as part of an AI strategy, they are going to come with solutions. So you don't have to worry that you're not going to get enough solutions. And then once you do these interviews, then is the next step is to look at the different levels, different types of AI. So there are three in my mind, three types of AI. One is the generative AI or natural language processing, where I see it as the mouth, the interaction.
Mm-hmm.
And the second type of AI is machine learning. I see it as the brain, where you put input variables and then you predict output variables or you optimize variables. And then the third type of AI is robotic process automation, which is the hand that moves things. Because if you only think and you don't act, that's not as powerful. Or if you only interact, let's say you have a chatbot, but that chatbot is not an AI agent that actually does stuff. And agentic AI is also going into that robotic process automation, the hand that moves things, again, is limited.
Mm-hmm.
And then once you have these solutions, then you can go back to the people and say, do you remember what you told me? These are the solutions that we find most suitable based on your input. Now, that's a different conversation than what many companies, small and big, say, hey, we've developed this fancy AI tool. Don't you want to use it? Well, they've never heard about that. And of course, it doesn't go well. Of course, it doesn't scale because you haven't done it with the people. Mm-hmm. And then I'll move a bit faster through this framework, and happy to discuss more deeper in, after the podcast. Also with people that are listening to us.
Mm-hmm, sure.
The next level is to look at holistically at these AI strategies, not only the AI solutions, but what is the data? What's your data readiness assessment? Do you have the data? And what solutions can you plan based on the data? And how are you going to plan your data? Then another one is processes, because if you only change technology without processes and people, then it's not going to fly. An AI project is a business project. It's not just a tech project. Mm-hmm. And if you keep it as just a tech project, it's not going to fly. It's not going to scale, as you're saying. And another element is the ethical part. For more certain companies, is crucial. For other companies, is one thing to still also think about that is very important. And then also to create in the meantime, next to a data readiness assessment, also an AI business case. A one-page business case for every AI solution. You don't have to spend 6 months on an AI business case, but you need to have some numbers that you need to use in order to prioritize the best AI solutions. Mm-hmm. And at the end, the culmination of this AI strategy is a roadmap that contains the best AI solutions that have been prioritized together with your AI community, together with the leadership, and that is in line with a data plan, with a people plan, with a process plan. And just to also link this, so you need to have people from all over the all levels of the organization. You need to start from the top, and you need to have a CEO on your side. Mm-hmm. When I go to companies, I'm not afraid to say, I want to talk to your CEO. That's where we need to start. If you want to scale, you need to start there.
Hi, it's Carsten. I wanted to inform you about a great offer if you want to improve data culture in your organization. We at Bark have developed the Data Culture Workshop. What we do is we discuss with you a list of the most promising and proven measures and initiatives that help organizations to improve their data culture. We bundled all of our experience we could gain over the last years in working with organizations that wanted to improve their data culture. At the end of the day, you have a prioritized list of measures and initiatives that are effective in improving data culture. I think it's a great offer. It bundles our experience, and in just one day, you really know what to do next if you want to improve data culture in your organization. Talk to me about the details. I'm looking forward to connect with you. Emma, that's pretty interesting how you adapted that framework and that you mixed basically all the technology implementation with the community, with the business aspects. But I think it became very clear that you should start with the business, with the strategy, with the CEO. Get the buy-in, get the strategy right, but then also think about implementing. I have one question on this one-sider, the business case. I think that's an interesting one. You said don't spend too much on it, time on it. Do you have any recommendation how we can come up with an estimation for value? Obviously, that's the key target here. We also know that often we don't know really the cost yet. Yeah, often we cannot really assess the, let's say, revenue gain, cost saving, whatever it is we're working on. What's your recommendation here? Or how did you do that in a space of a lot of uncertainties? Yeah, how do we come up with a business case?
So some AI solutions may have more of a quantitative value and some more of a qualitative value. You should always try to have as much quantitative value as possible. But this doesn't mean that an AI solution with a qualitative value cannot be prioritized. But it needs to be more like an exception than the rule, and then leave room for exceptions as well. So that's a starting point. Then when you are having those conversations with the AI community about their biggest challenges, I'm a great fan of looking at their current KPIs. Because if you're coming with a solution and a new KPI that they never cared about, The question is, who's going to measure it? And tech people are not, their main job is not to create KPIs. And then it becomes a more difficult journey to do the KPIs on top of the implementation. But if you work with their KPIs, then number one, you know that they care most about it. Then you can also start measuring those KPIs and see whether you are close to your estimation. And then on top of that, when you start discussing the AI solutions and actually start with the challenges and then the AI solutions, then the value and the numbers are and the KPIs are getting much closer to or bringing you much closer to an AI business case. One of the main reasons why people have difficulty in business case is because they don't start right.
All right.
And of course, sometimes we also have AI initiatives that are prioritized, and they are about increasing the quality of the healthcare system, for instance. And yeah, you can measure that. You can try to measure that, but you know that this is the right choice. Mm-hmm. Another thing that is important is also how do you bring enthusiasm? So when you have your AI roadmap, prioritize also AI solutions that make people excited, especially at the very beginning. Because you know those, you need those people for the long run. Mm-hmm. And if you do something that they love, so for instance, we had an example when we are developing an AI agent that is automatically registering the hours that people are spending on a particular patient or project or so on. People love this. Mm-hmm. It's a great business case as well, because it increases the revenue because you declare your hours. So then the hours that you may not declare. So it's revenue and it's linked to that. And it's also some estimation. But estimation should be accepted, especially if you do it in a one-page business case. And then once you start implementing and you implement it fast, every 3 to 6 months you have new MVP. And then you test it, then you can test your assumption much quicker. But if you have a project for 1 year and then you work hard with a team of 20 people, then and then it is not realizable, then you're wasting your money.
Mm-hmm.
Speed is so important, also for value.
Yeah.
And cost as well. Cost, definitely. Yeah.
Also, yeah, so it all comes together. But now getting people excited, obviously, is a key part in creating also data and AI culture. So then we are in the core of our, let's say, podcast main theme here. Let me just summarize what I heard so far. So you said start with the community. Yeah, build this AI community to create buy-in upfront. Yeah, not as an afterthought, but as a forethought. Yeah, start with that. Mm-hmm. You said align yourself with the KPIs that people care about, yeah, what they are interested in. So that, I think that's a super important one, because then you align basically your goals with their goals. Yeah? And then you said choose the initiatives or projects that people get excited about, that they're passionate about. Choose them early so you get this buy-in again. So I think all three are super important points. What else is there? I mean, I would assume that even with all these things we just talked about, you still have a lot of people that are not really super happy about AI. Yeah, that still are fearful. Is AI taking my job? Yeah, is it really helping me? Is it just another IT project on top of the list what I already have to do? First of all, is that the right observation? Secondly, what else can we do to get people more excited about AI, get more buy-in?
One element that is very important whenever I talk to people is respect for the expertise that people bring. So first, if people are coming with a risk, listen carefully. They do you a great favor. And I know that it may not feel like that, but the earlier you embrace this, the better, and think about what people are saying and about the risks, the better AI solutions that you are developing. So resistance is not necessarily a bad thing.
Mm-hmm.
I think if you start your change management journey with this mindset that is bad if people oppose, then it's going to be a painful and long journey. So that's the first thing that I want to mention. The next thing is there is this risk of losing your job. And I heard many times that AI is not going to replace your job, but someone with AI skills will. And I totally agree with that.
Mm-hmm.
And in all reality, if you look, I like to compare the AI revolution with what is happening, for instance, with the passport control. You used to have much more people at the passport control checking your passports. Right now, you have one person for 10 machines, and we are all going much faster than ever before. But it is one person. You don't have, how many did I say, six? You don't have six, for instance. You have one or you have two. So there is a reality that we may not need as many people. I also have trust in the ingenuity of people, that there will be new jobs that will be created. I mean, in the before the Industrial Revolution, we had 40% of people working in agriculture. And they are not working in agriculture anymore, but we have so many other jobs. Now, are we unhappy right now that we are not working in agriculture? I'm happy I'm not working in agriculture. And the majority are. So this brings also new jobs, but this doesn't mean that it's not going to replace certain jobs and not going to make certain jobs more efficient, and therefore you need less people. Now, with this in mind, going back to the adoption and to how do you bring people along, creating an AI community is a great opportunity for people to learn AI skills that are crucial for the future. Right now, learning AI is the same as in the past learning to use a computer. And right now, we are not accepting people at job interviews that say, or especially if they are on the office work, they say, no, I cannot use a computer, and it's a horrible thing to do and to use, and I'm never going to use that. I find it inconvenient. Now, it's going to be the same with AI. So this is the great opportunity. Right now, there's like a bus that is in a bus stop, and there's an opportunity to hop in. And when you create an AI strategy and you create an AI community, is a great opportunity of a, mm-hmm. of like a bus where you can hop in, especially for an organization. There are so many times you can do an AI strategy, right? And of course, people can still hop on the bus along the way, but it's not going to be such a big stop as when you do an AI strategy, and especially in these years, that this year, next year. So you're creating opportunity for those people. And those are more likely to stay as well, because they learn AI, they know how to work with AI, they come up with the ideas, they co-create. So it's super fun as well. If they are not in the boat, then they are going to miss the boat. And that's the reality. And we are not pitying a person right now that doesn't want to learn computer skills.
Mm-hmm.
To use a laptop, just to use a laptop. But yeah, also there is another thing that is important, to have respect for everyone wherever they are, because we need everyone. And just because someone is not hopping in the journey with us, this doesn't mean that they don't have great value as an individual and as a person. So respecting that, maybe there are other things that they can do. Or maybe they can still do their job. Maybe we automize 80% and there's still 20% of exceptions to be done. So having that respect, because they are valuable, everyone is valuable.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think that's an excellent recommendation, because it creates culture, a culture of respect for sure. And where the human being is in the center is often, I would say, a culture where people feel more comfortable, but in the end are probably also more motivated, and are more moving along. And we have this change management problem or challenge to do. And AI, I think, is accelerating that. Yeah, that things are moving now even quicker. And the big question is, how can we get the people along? And respect, I think, could be or should be an excellent foundation for that.
Yeah.
To get things working. Thanks. That's a really good input. And we are already approaching the end of our time, unfortunately. But I think we already got a lot of excellent tips from you. Now, maybe let's shift a little bit into the future. Now we have agentic AI coming. I would really like to hear your thoughts on that. What's next? Yeah. So what's happening right now? How are AI strategies maybe shifting right now or changing to adapt to new technology possibilities like agentic? What's your view? What's happening?
Yes. Yeah, so we are in already right now in this phase of agentic AI and chatbots, but also be able to act on it. What I believe is the next level is the multi-level agents, where with just one chat box, you can give any demands and instructions that you want. And then what you can build is you can build a manager AI agent that you work with. It's really like in real life. You have one manager and then the manager talks to the people that do the work. So then it's also this opportunity that everyone to act as a director in a way that have their own manager, AI manager. And then underneath you have the different AI agents that are doing different things. One is sending email that is specialized on that. Another one is creating marketing campaigns. Another one is doing now all kinds of things like that. Then if you have this manager agent, then the more agents you are connecting to this manager agent, the more, I would even say, limitless is your capability or capacity. Because if you add also agents to fill in forms, to book an appointment at a restaurant, do basically the activities that we are doing, and then put the manager agent on top and you say, okay, I want the best restaurant, and then I want to email all those people about the restaurant. I want an invitation in one prompt, all kinds of things, like maybe 10 or 20 different activities. And that manager agent understands and then converts that into what each agent needs to be doing. I think that's the future. That's the present, I mean. We are already looking at making the best personal assistant, so I don't need a secretary anymore, for instance.
Absolutely. Do you have any examples, maybe from Unilever? What agents did you implement there?
I can say in general what agents are there in the market. So one is this personal assistant manager that actually does the work the second you tell them, and you don't have to go back to the day tomorrow or the day after and say, hey, did you do that? Because it has been done the same time. Mm-hmm. That's one thing. Another one is the customer services agents where you can, instead of having this platform where you have like a self-service platform where you have a lot of buttons as a consumer to click, change one button to change the address, another button to do something else, that you have only one chat box and then you say, okay, this is what I want done. And then that to be interpreted with, okay, these are the actions that need to be done. And then those actions to be done, then a notification to be sent automatically and say, hey, we've done what you asked to do. Of course, there are controls that are needed. So that's another example of a multi-agent framework. But you can also make it limitless in the sense of you have add as many actions as possible under one manager agent. But then you also need to trust the people that they're doing the right thing with that. Mm-hmm. So control and control of AI, that's going to create a lot more jobs than we have right now.
Absolutely. Yeah, someone needs to do it. This whole, let's say, technology or this wave of agentic AI has started, I think, even less than a year ago. We see pretty fast adoption. So that seems to be something that companies really jump on. And I want to get your view on that. Do you see that also? Is that moving very quickly as I see it?
Yes. If people realize that they can do so much more right away, then they like that. But if it feels too complicated, that's also one thing that slows down adoption. The thing with AI is that it understands us.
Right.
So you just need to say what you want, and then it can do that that particular thing. This means that my grandma, I don't have grandmas that are alive, but a grandma can just say through her television something, and that that can understand what she means, because she can say it in so many different ways. So it's very much, it's approachable, but also from an accessibility perspective, you can access so many more people.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that's one important thing. But it also comes with a risk. Because, yes, AI understands you and then it makes you a great consumer. But if AI can do the work of a person with an IQ of 100 or 110, and if you need to be a person with an IQ of 120 to make something better than what AI gives you, it also brings the question of what will happen to the people with an average IQ of 100 or 110.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, you see the same. No? Agentic AI has this very concrete value. And that's, I think, the main reason why it's moving so fast. But then that also means it should be an integral part of your AI strategy, yeah, to make sure that you link it to the operational processes, that you're aware of the technical capabilities that we have now. Yeah? And I think that's also a key aspect in AI, that things are moving so quickly that basically you need maybe one or a few people that always have a look on the market, understand trends very early, and also are able to basically evaluate how useful it is for my organization now. Should I adopt it? Should I wait a little bit until, for example, accessibility is become better? So I think also on that side, since it's moving so fast, it's very important to make that also part of your AI strategy, to always observe and integrate new technology.
Yes, definitely.
Emma, it was really a great conversation. Thanks so much. I think we got a lot out of it. And wish you all the best. Hope to see you again soon. And with that, I say bye-bye.
Bye. Thank you very much. It was a great pleasure.